You're listening to another episode of Open Source CXO, the podcast designed to share insights on how to excel in your business using technology, regardless of the industry. Host Robert Kehoe is a self-taught software developer who has grown to the role of CEO. Renowned for his collaborations with organizations such as Stanford University, Nelnet, and Louis Vuitton, he continually seeks new challenges to conquer in the world of tech. Accompanying him is Don Blackburn, a veteran COO with over 25 years of experience in cultivating diverse relationships and driving innovation in various technical projects. Each week, they'll be sitting down with some of the nation's foremost technology leaders to develop an open source playbook, drawing from their firsthand experiences in the field. Let's talk some tech.
Today, our guest is Welsh Harris, who's with Ascenco. Welcome.
Hello, thanks. Good to be here.
Why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about Ascenco, about yourself, and kind of inform the audience here.
So I co-founded Ascenco. I'm the CTO in around 2017. We got started. And we are primarily a software company, building software to modernize the way hospitals manage and procure surgical instruments and devices. So kind of focused on that niche and really started off with a focus on data. That area was kind of, there were some legacy systems in that space, but they were having trouble keeping their data accurate. So we kind of built a platform to help collect all that information and kind of clean up those systems. And over time, clients said, hey, you've kind of built a resource management platform to do that. Can we just use that as our, you know, management system? And so we foolishly said, sure. And so for years, we've been building that, kind of building that out. So now we do kind of resource management in that area, quality management, staff modeling and management. And we're just now introducing some e-procurement.
So it's mostly devices. You're tracking the devices that go in surgical rooms and operating rooms.
You know, you imagine surgery, they actually bring in, you know, for any surgery, they'll bring in three or four metal boxes. And each box has a bunch of surgical instruments and scissors, scalpels, all that stuff. They might have some other power equipment like drills, scopes, cameras, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so all of that stuff, you know, those metal boxes are kind of unique in each hospital because they're built based on surgeon preference. So surgeon A might do the same procedure with different instruments than surgeon B. So each one of these boxes ends up being kind of this unique, you know, configuration, bought instruments from lots of different vendors. It's just kind of a little bit different kind of inventory than most inventory you deal with. And that's why in this space, you can't just use the typical ERP systems or kind of the other system. You need something a little bit more customizable. And then the other thing about that inventory is it's reusable. This stuff is stainless steel. So they'll use those same instruments for 3 to 5 years, sometimes even more. So they're continually going around this process of being, you know, used on a patient. It goes downstairs into an area where it's decontaminated.
You guys keep track of the entire cycle for all that?
Yeah. We're doing the whole cycle of, you know, receiving it in decontamination. You have to put the instruments in a sink to wash them, put it through an industrial washer. Then someone has to put all those instruments back together in the box and then cook it in an oven, make sure it's sterile, and around it goes.
So it's kind of a chain of custody thing, right? Yeah. Basically, I mean, you have to prove all that happens in case there's a lawsuit, I'm guessing.
Exactly. And you can, and you know, a lot of our clients are still, we're converting people are doing this all on paper. So it's just one of these areas that was kind of a holdout where it's just there's a lot of variation in the process, a fair amount of complexity, and just people had tried software systems that didn't really fit. Some folks built a couple legacy systems 20 years ago that have spread somewhat. So it's been a real journey kind of, you know, when we started out, you know, my co-founder, Brian, was in the surgical device industry. Mm-hmm. And I was doing software. We'd actually been college roommates and talked about business ideas over the years and nothing caught on. And then he was telling me the story that he was receiving a large order of instruments for a new hospital, and it was total chaos. They just couldn't figure out where any of the stuff was supposed to go. It was this information overload problem. And that's where we decided, you know, we could build a software solution for this space. And our beginning idea was Amazon for surgical instruments. I mean, you have something like this water bottle. Lots of people sell a water bottle. In that area, nobody knew, you know, this 6-inch scissor, 20 people sell it, but how much does it cost? How much do they sell it for? Who actually sells this thing? That didn't exist. So we set out to do that. And when we talked to the hospitals, they said, oh, we would love that. But we're on paper here. Like we have much bigger fish to fry than that. Yeah. So we've been kind of working through that process these years of kind of building a platform to help them manage really their whole business, this manufacturing facility under the operating room, and are just now being put that e-procurement on top.
Crazy something like that would exist just...
It's crazy that the hospital's still running stuff on paper.
Yeah. Yeah. There's paper everywhere. Yeah.
What kind of compliances do you guys have to deal with? Or is there any actual set standards or anything like that?
Yeah. So there are. There's a group called ISHM. There's a group called Joint Commission. And so they'll actually come through the hospitals annually and kind of check to make sure everything's being done properly. And the software does help a lot with that, because they'll come in and say, hey, show us your records of, you know, when you sterilize this tray. Mm. And, you know, in the paper days, you're kind of in a filing cabinet going through. And in our system, it's like, there it is, you know. So there is a lot of regulation around it. So we can kind of use that as a guiding light of what we're building. And really, we spent a lot of time in these departments. Our platform was really built based on user feedback. You know, neither of us had worked in sterile processing. Now about a third of our team has worked in that department and really knows it. And we get a lot of feedback from them. But in the early days, I lived in sterile processing and just kind of figured out what they needed and started building.
So does each device, does it come with like a serial number? Do you guys keep track of it like to that level, obviously, to make sure it's been...
It shouldn't be a barcode.
I mean, can't hang a tag on it or nothing. So I was curious, how does that work? Yeah.
So not yet. So right now, some of the instruments are starting to have a barcode.
Okay.
But they are not unique identifiers for that particular instrument. It just tells you the type of instrument.
Okay.
And there is technology people are working on to be able to do that. They try to put like a little RFID nub on the instruments and then use like an RFID wand to track them. That technology is still evolving. It's pretty expensive. The nubs fall off, you know.
Yeah. Right. And I could imagine, you know, somebody would want to enter a serial number every time anyway.
And you probably have, I'm guessing because it's patient related, you probably have HIPAA issues, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So we don't actually deal with any patient health information. So,
okay.
Fortunately. So, but we still are so adjacent, we're so close to that we take HIPAA really seriously. Our team goes through training, you know, our software system, we build it as if we might have PHI in case something leaks through.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, security and healthcare is obviously a huge deal and something that, you know, changes every year. And
we've had a couple of guests on so far that are in the medical field, and it's kind of crazy. Yeah. You know, some of the stories you hear about HIPAA and compliance and what you have to go through.
It's a journey. I didn't really expect how many layers of that onion there would be, but we've written a lot of policies, you know, kind of go over this. We have kind of our drills of, you know, what if things go down, how do we bring it back up, you know, all that fun stuff. So
sure. What's the makeup of your team developer wise? How many developers, tech stacks, different things like that?
Yeah, so we got about 10 developers. Yeah,
all 10, here 10, in
10,
the US?
Including myself. Okay. All here in the US.
Okay.
Some of us here in Kansas City, others, you know, Idaho, David's in Sydney, Australia, so a little spread out.
Nice.
So yeah, and we do on the front end, we're doing React, JavaScript, back end, the workhorse is Postgres.
Okay.
And then we're using Nginx, some middleware stuff, and Python.
Great.
And then we actually utilize a business intelligence platform called Domo that we also baked into the app. So
I'm familiar with it, but I don't think we've done a project with it.
No, I don't think so.
I've heard of it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of Tableau kind of thing. Yeah,
Business analytics type stuff. How does that factor into, if there's a process, you guys are obviously dealing with equipment. How does the analytics piece factor into all this?
You know, that space, that process of making sure the surgeon gets the instruments when he or she needs them, there are all these steps, and we're measuring everything that happens. Mm. And so we're measuring the productivity of the staff. We're measuring the volume of instruments that are needing to be processed to make sure maybe they aren't going to start going over capacity. We're looking at overtime. We're looking at the quality events. So, you know, this is a very somewhat manual process. I mean, people have to put these trays together. Someone might accidentally not put an instrument in there that's needed in surgery. We track all of those quality events to make sure we can see, you know, which staff might be making mistakes and need coaching. which processes might need to be improved to bring those quality events down. So we really just look at, you know, every angle of what they're doing. And there's actually, it's funny, we actually struggle with almost measuring too much and trying to show too much. I mean, there's just, So we've got tons and tons of charts.
Information overload, I get it.
Yeah, we do our best to kind of surface the charts that people really want to see.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then they get to set up their own, on your platform, they go out and set up whatever reports they want to see, customize their reports.
Yeah, so we have kind of like our standard suite of analytic dashboards, standard suite of auto-emailed reports that we send out to people. Okay. And then for clients that have our gold package, they meet with our data scientists monthly. And can build custom dashboards kind of focused on what they want to see. So
now I could imagine, I mean, this is the case in a lot of different industries. You have different pieces of software that accomplish different things. Does your guys, have you gone through that step of obviously you guys aren't trying to be a one software fits everybody kind of right. deal. So do you guys do any kind of integrations with any of the major popular kind of systems out there or anything like
right.
that?
We actually do, we have a lot of interfaces now. So we interface with a lot of the equipment, so the washers and the sterilizers. We integrate with these, call them biological indicator readers, that you'll put those in the sterilizer, that oven, make sure it kills the bacteria that live in there. And then we interface with the EMRs, like Epic and Cerner. And those are really powerful interfaces because it lets us, number one, you have this sterile processing department managing this inventory. You have the operating room using it, and they both generally are speaking different languages. So you have a list of, say, 2,000 things in your hospital. They oftentimes, all 2,000 names are different between those two departments.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we started on the data side. We make sure all those names are the same, and then we'll put an interface in place so that they make changes to those names in our system. That goes over to the EMR, so everybody, speaking the same language. But more importantly, we get the surgical schedule. And that's telling us, here's tomorrow's surgeries. Here's the inventory that's needed for tomorrow. And then on our side, we can say, oh, well, here's the work you need to do. Here's how to prioritize your work. Here's a digital way to pick those trays for those cases and associate them with the cases. So
does that schedule come from the EMR?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So usually the EMRs, they generally are the spot where they're specifying, okay, if Dr. Jones is doing a lab Coley procedure, here's all the things that surgeon's going to need. And here's the schedule of that surgery. They handle all that stuff.
Gotcha.
In the EMR.
Okay.
And they don't have any competitive product to yours.
They really don't. Yeah. So
it kind of drops off and you pick up.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's one of those niches where, those like looking at, a health systems IT department, I always see the their goal of let's have as few software systems as possible, which makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there are just these spaces like this niche that we're in where they're just, the EMRs just don't touch it. It's a whole different can of worms, and it doesn't seem like they want to get into it.
Yeah.
So do they like you guys, or are they? Yeah. Are they viewing you as kind of a competitor?
I mean,
really?
They're so massive. I don't know how much they really know
no
about us, honestly. Yeah. Because the hospitals, I mean, those systems are so big and used throughout the health system.
Sure.
We're generally working with an internal. They have a huge staff internally that just works on that system, who's kind of the go-between. So we're usually working with the internal IT team that works with those systems.
Gotcha.
So when you integrate with them, are you sharing data both ways, or are you just getting information one way from them?
Yeah, so we go both ways. So we kind of manage the inventory. So if a new surgical tray is added or a name is changed, we'll send that over to the EMR. And then those are the names that show up on the schedule that come back to us and let us know, okay, here's what to expect for tomorrow and the next.
So I would think they'd be kind of particular about who they're allowing to integrate with their system and push data in, right?
Well, they have, so in those cases, it's usually HL7, and they'll already have, they generally have these HL7 interfaces built. I'm not sure when. I think they've been around a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just kind of leveraging kind of the HL7 specs that they've already placed.
Okay, good.
So
that was going to be one of my questions is, for somebody who's, never really got into integrating with EMR, how would you even start? Because it's not, can't imagine it's, I guess it is public and there's some public information out there and documentation.
Yeah. The HL7 spec is out there.
Okay.
The fun thing that we
What is that? Just like an XML structured type document, JSON or something like that? Or
yeah,
is that basically what it is?
It's hard to say if it's more fun looking raw HL7 or XML. They kind of tie for, you know, giving you headaches. But yeah, it's just, they use pipes.
Okay.
But yeah, it's just a structured text.
Okay.
And it's, they do have them published. The fun thing that we found is I don't think we've actually gotten, and so, you know, you're basically sending messages back and forth, ugly JSON back and forth, basically. But I don't know that we've ever found the same, even though the same EMR, the messages are slightly different at every client we go to. I think these systems are just very, very configurable. They're just these massive behemoth systems.
Yeah.
So
when you say client, are you talking about like
every Epic? Health system?
Epic
is different. Every Epic message we get is different per health system.
Oh goodness. Do you guys do a lot of customization per?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe not every single one, but a lot of variation. And they're small variations, not a huge deal, but, you know, it's a specification, but definitely configurable. And then the other thing with that, you know, for us being a cloud, you know, modern system cloud-based, we did need to create what we call a cloud connector, where we'll have an on-premise server that communicates with all these systems, you know, within the hospital, so that we're not, you know, trying to communicate through their firewall. So we're behind their firewall with this little cloud connector that it's just kind of a communication relay. So that's what communicates with the EMRs and all the equipment, and then outgoing HTTPS to the cloud for the data that's appropriate to be in the cloud.
That's fair enough.
So
interesting. So in each health system is the same. You don't have to get down to the hospital level.
Yeah, no,
Shawnee Mission Medical, or, well, I guess that doesn't exist anymore.
But
St. Luke's.
So each health system, so we have kind of a monolith code base. So one code base for all of our clients, and then we went with kind of the feature flag concept, where we'll add a new feature, we put it behind a feature flag, just a true false Boolean, and we'll usually even roll that out to all of our clients with the feature flag off. So nobody sees it. It's just out there. It's in production, but nobody can see it. And then once we've communicated, talk to them about, okay, here's this new thing. Do you guys want this? We click a checkbox and now it's visible.
Yep. Gotcha. So we're familiar with that. We do that with some of our clients too. So,
One of the things we had talked about was the digital transformation. And and I talked about this a little bit before the recording. We joke about it all the time because we see it all the time in the industry, and I think it's one of those phrases that can mean different things to different people. It depends. Yeah. I think it's used differently depending on
industry, broad.
depending on the size of the company. It's one of those general terms. So talk about digital transformation.
What does it even mean, honestly?
What is it to you?
And do you guys help facilitate that within these healthcare organizations?
So when we look at digital transformation, particularly if we look at a client who's on paper.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're operating on paper. They're not using their computers. And so for us, that digital transformation is saying, look, we're going to take all this paper information. We're going to digitize that and put that in a software platform where you can see all of your information and you can, you know, manage all of your processes through that platform. And then for us, you know, so going from paper to software, I think that's a really good definition of digital transformation.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of probably that term isn't used that way anymore very often. We're kind of in a unique niche in that respect.
Right.
But then the other way we look at it, a term that we use a lot is continuous improvement. And what we're really thinking is, look, if we can get you in a digital state where everything you're doing is in this software platform, you know, your data, your processes, your analytics, well, now, you know, every department that we work with has goals of saying, well, look, we want to have, you know, we want our productivity to go up, or we're having lots of holes in these wrappers and we want to figure out a way to get rid of those things. And so by having this, you know, everything in this digital state, it enables that continuous improvement loop. So digital transformation for us is, you know, going from paper to digital and creating that opportunity for continuous improvement that can really, I think, be endless. I mean, nobody's perfect. So if you can put a software system in place that enables that kind of continuous improvement, you're in a digital transformation kind of flow.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Not imagine. I mean, technology changes all the time. So even if you're in a state where you're doing pretty good, it's just going to evolve again in the next 5 years anyway. So
yeah.
That constant feedback loop of continuous improvement, I think, is very important.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned, you know, interfacing with other software systems. I mean, I think that, that's kind of a natural transformation that's starting to happen more and more now. And we kind of look at, you know, we use Slack internally, and I love going to the Slack marketplace and seeing all the different things that I can hook into it. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of stealing that and putting that, you know, a version of that in our software to say, oh, okay, here's all the little
marketplace,
all the different things that you can kind of hook into. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of a transformation that's slowly but surely, well, in healthcare, slowly but surely happening a little faster in other industries.
Yeah, so, fair enough.
Yeah,
I have to bring up the term and ask, because it comes up, it seems like, every conversation, especially with healthcare. It's you know, we've heard it brought up a couple of times in our podcast about AI in healthcare and how it's kind of becoming more prevalent and how it's being used within healthcare and things like that. Has it crept into yours yet?
Have you set your sights on that at all?
Yeah, we have. So we are mostly looking at it on the analytics side. So for us, we're starting to use ChatGPT a little bit. We have two ideas for this. The first is, can we feed it information, kind of raw data from a lot of different charts, and then say, hey, write a few sentences to just kind of tell people what's important. What are the key takeaways from these charts? Because we do have our clients, we have kind of live dashboards that they're looking at to make sure everything's going okay. And can we kind of have almost like get rid of the charts altogether long term and just have an intelligent bot kind of saying, hey, you know, you need more people in this area, or there's a problem over here. The other area we're really looking at, we were just looking the other day, Google was talking about an LLM they've done for predictive time series analysis, which is, so they're starting to kind of shift some of this into, you know, can we, you know, because we do try to do a lot of predictive, you know, we know what's been happening in the past, what's going to happen in the next few days or the next year. And we think that AI is really going to start, you know, feeding into those predictions quite a bit.
Yeah. Sure. So to make it more accurate and expand. And,
well, it could find things that, you know, somebody who's coding just a simple algorithm might technically miss. There's patterns and all sorts of things that you could find. That's cool. AI is a big push for us this year as well with a lot of our clients. So that's really neat.
Well, and another thing, you know, I don't know if I would call it AI from a technical standpoint, but where we're going with our analytics, you know, we always imagine, you know, Iron Man's suit, where it says, hey, your suit is overheating. And we kind of think about, well, what is it doing? And it's realizing that, you know, over time, the temperature is going up. It also knows, okay, here's a normal temperature and above a certain threshold, I need to tell you about it. And it kind of needs to put those things together. And so we've been collecting a lot of KPIs, you know, and each KPI you need to know is going up, good or bad. What is that benchmark or what's normal? Mm-hmm. And we're in a space where those answers don't really exist yet. And we're kind of building those answers by having all this data from all these different hospitals. We're starting to learn what's normal. We're starting to see what KPIs they care about. And so we're imagining long term, can we, you know, rather than have all these charts and different ways to look at things, can we say, you know, this metric is going up, that's bad, it's going above a certain threshold, that chart goes to the top. And all the other stuff that's going fine,
yeah,
it's over here.
Right.
You know, so I don't know if that's AI per se, but it's a major initiative of ours to get something like that done.
Always call it AI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you could charge more.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can charge more for it.
Yeah. It's definitely it's AI, but yeah, it's, yeah.
No, absolutely. I'd love to learn a little bit about kind of how you've structured your development team and how you guys kind of operate internally. You don't have to give us exact details, but
sure.
You know, I'd imagine there's an agile-esque sort of process that you guys follow. And
we've something just evolved over the years. We love tinkering with that. So it's, we use something called Pivotal Tracker for Agile.
Very familiar with it.
And love Pivotal Tracker. You know, Jira is great, but it's a little too flexible and we spin out of control. So Pivotal Tracker is like, here's what you can do and that's it. Yeah. And so we'll do 2-week sprints and we do a 2-week dev cycle that goes to a 2-week QA and then to a 2-week documentation. And then that goes to production. So it's kind of a 6-week cycle that everything goes through.
Yeah.
And so it's been really nice because every 2 weeks we kind of sit down and, you know, kind of look at the feature requests that have come in, pick a few of those to go to keep kind of the smaller things moving.
Yeah.
And then look at the larger projects that we're working on and kind of figure out, okay, in this 2 weeks, you know, what's reasonable for everybody to get done? Mm-hmm. And we found it kind of reduces stress to be like, okay, you know, we don't have this massive project in front of us. It's like, here's a reasonable amount of work in 2 weeks, mm-hmm. give or take. I mean, it's usually a stretch goal and we finish 70% of it. But, you know, that's kind of good. We've gotten in a real cadence with that and it works great.
So how granular do you guys break down each of your tasks?
So 8 hours or less.
Okay.
Yeah. So most of them are 2 to 4 hours.
And you yeah. tell Pivotal Tracker it's sort of based on the thing that I was telling you about where you assign it sort of a weight, I would guess I'd call it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, level of complexity and it'll track velocity over time. I like Pivotal Tracker. Yeah. It tends to get a little complicated for us because our clients look at it and go, okay, what is all this? So right. we don't really have that as a client facing sort of deal.
Yeah.
But it is a great tool to track velocity and sort of estimate things out. So we have one of our clients who breaks everything out into very, very granular things. So 8 hours or less, that's a good, so a day's worth of work basically.
Yeah.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah. And well, sometimes kind of, you know, sometimes those 8 hour stories do last 3 or 4 days.
Yeah. It happens.
That's life. Yeah. It's when you're 90% done, you're half done a couple times and then it's done. But yeah.
So that's always, you know, that's always a conversation of, you know, something we have to deal with often is how to estimate, you know, estimating is very difficult. What you thought would take 8 hours now takes 3 days. And how do you sort of, I mean, with a team like yours, you know, you guys, you know, are seemingly small enough to really kind of get through that pretty quickly. But with these larger organizations and their boards and trying to convince them, okay, well, you know, I thought it took 8 hours, but it really took a lot longer. Trying to explain the reasons why is always a challenge. I'm just curious how you guys deal with that sort of thing and estimating.
Yeah, so hard to estimate.
Possible.
So I've been doing that. Yeah, I've been doing it long enough to know it's really hard. And, you know, so our client success team, we wrote a script that says we don't actually do estimates when clients ask for things unless they want to do a special project and kind of put together a quote and say, hey, we kind of want a custom software project. And if they do want to, you know, because we have a lot of clients all making feature requests, which we love, but we have to kind of prioritize everything that's coming in.
You guys don't charge for that sort of thing then? Like extra?
So we don't charge.
Okay. So you just prioritize things and try to get it done for them.
Exactly. Okay. So we just kind of take those requests and kind of prioritize what we think will drive the most value for the most people.
Do you ever have to balance that? What will benefit other customers as well? Like, do you ever get a feature request? You're like, you know what? This isn't really going to benefit everybody, so we're not going to do it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we do. And that ends up being kind of a back and forth with clients. I mean, some clients are like, yeah, I didn't really care about that very much anyway. Or they're like, no, we really need this for some reason.
Right.
And then we'll get pulled into doing it. But then if they do want, you know, I need to know exactly how long this is going to take and I need you to put your resources towards it. That's when they're going to get a quote and we have to do real time estimating, which so fortunately I've gotten myself in a place where I don't have to do it very often.
Okay.
Because we are really responsive to clients kind of, you know, that feature request pipeline, it runs pretty smooth.
But we try to say we don't do it either, but we always end up doing it. Clients don't like that open. We charge for it.
Yeah.
Though,
but,
so.
But when will it be ready?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But I guess if the client's paying for it, you got to give it a little more.
Yeah. And then, right. Yeah. Yeah. So then we'll give them a nice, you know,
you got to pay attention to it and actually deliver. Yeah. So then that's just their product. That doesn't go into the main product.
No, it does. So far, everything does go into the main product.
Okay, so they pay for it, but everybody else benefits.
But it'll be the feature under the feature flag sort of implementation that you were talking about.
And usually, when that happens, it's something that's really unique to them that probably no one else is going to use.
Sure,
or very few.
But it's still in there in your code base. Do you ever get concerned about that cluttering up, you know, some of the system?
We really haven't. I mean, it keeps growing. It is massive, but
it's organized fairly well.
Yeah, it's organized very well, and the tools these days are so fast to just say, hey, I'm searching for this, you know, these keywords, and you can kind of find where you're going. Yeah. So it is, I mean, for new developers, it definitely takes some months to kind of get a handle on what we're doing in the real world. We found people almost have to go on site to the hospital, kind of, you know, when I first got into this area, I wasn't in healthcare at all, so I knew, you know, I thought of surgery as, you know, here's this room, and it's, you know, that's it. And I didn't realize behind that door is this bustling city of people and stuff going on. Yeah. So people generally have to go on site, spend some time, really see that to kind of grok what's happening.
Yeah.
And then our code base, it is big and complex enough. It takes people a few months just to get their bearings.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's just where we're at.
So we've had a couple of conversations lately, and it seems to be a big topic too around the community and IT especially.
Yeah.
Is the remote stuff? Are all your developers in house, or do you?
Well, you got the one dude in Australia.
Well, that guy's clearly not coming.
He's not coming into the
office. Well, 1 or 2 days a week, maybe. But it's,
So yeah, no, about half of us work in an office here in KC, and then the other half just work from home. And even the folks in Kansas City, we'll come in about half the time.
Okay, so you're hybrid.
Yeah, we're hybrid.
That's what everybody wants.
Remote.
Yeah. Which actually, from the beginning, building the software team at Ascendco, I'm a developer. It's what I love doing the most. And I really, I think I'm kind of a typical developer in that sense where I can get in the flow state and have a 12-hour day, and then the next day I'm a little slower. So from the beginning, I really kind of let that kind of flex time, I don't care when you do your work or where you do your work, just get it done concept. Yeah. And it's worked really well for us.
Yeah.
And I have found that people do like coming into the office, like even with the option to work home from home all the time. We have fun getting together and hanging out.
Sure. Yeah. Now, this may not, you don't have to answer this question here, but
sure.
I was curious, your team is pretty much, local or it's predominantly U.S. based. Why haven't you, gone to sort of an offshore model or, obviously it's the cost savings, is always the shiny price tag is what everybody goes toward. I'm just curious why you've chosen to build your team.
I think probably the biggest part of it is that concept of needing to kind of go physically visit our clients to really get a sense of what's happening. And really, and also everyone at Ascendco. So you can imagine going from paper to software, we can't just drop it off and leave. We're there for a week, at elbow, showing people how to do things. And
so you're actually on-prem doing some of the work.
We're on-prem.
Okay.
And everyone in Ascendco partakes in those go lives, some more than others, but all the developers at least a few times a year are on site to kind of get that client feedback, see how people are using in the real world, kind of look over their shoulder a little and see like they're having to move their mouse too far, that kind of thing.
Right. Okay.
So I think it was just that's just kind of led us down that path.
Right. No, that makes sense.
So.
Okay. Yeah, we're obviously big advocates for the U.S.-based model, communication, just the various things that are challenging with other models, but everybody's got their way, right? So
It seems like everybody's finding the whole the whole on-prem or hybrid model or full remote model right now.
Yeah.
Different companies. It seems to be trending back to going to the office, and a lot of the big companies like the Boeings and just recently announced it. And there was somebody else just at one of the big Fortune 100s just announced it's going to be 100% in
100%,
office.
100%, huh?
100% in office again.
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of value in being together, and I think it's for different teams, it's different. I think software development's a little different than even something like a marketing group or a client success group, if we're doing things right, we're mostly just staring at our screen, so
exactly.
But there's always something to be said for being able to communicate, Zoom screen, these video conferencing, it's fine, but we've got a whiteboard back there and we'll go back there, we'll talk about things really. But you're right, most of the time we're really just behind a computer screen trying to knock stuff out, so it doesn't always have to be. So the hybrid works great for a development,
And we actually went as far as we got Oculuses for a few of the team members, and we would try to meet, virtually in there.
How did that work out?
Hey, it's okay. It's a little distracting.
Weird?
It's a little distracting.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can imagine it's a little interesting.
But, it was like, it's the price of a plane ticket, and instead of all getting together, let's just, Now, we did also occasionally, you can play mini golf in there, so... Now we kind of golf together and hang out. So that actually worked out better than the meeting.
You got to get the Apple Vision one. I hear it's better.
Yeah, that
little
pretty cool.
A little pricey, but...
A little more expensive.
A little more than an airline flight.
Maybe not to Australia. I don't know.
Is there anything else you wanted to cover or talk about?
No, okay. This was fun, guys. This was awesome. Yeah. This was really cool.
I think that one went really well. I think you get...